For a long time, accessing and utilizing data has been one of the biggest challenges impacting philanthropy. Luckily, there are organizations working to address the challenge, not just for themselves, but for the whole sector. Giving Tuesday is one organization leading the way forward. Welcome to Impact Audio. I'm Sam Kaplan, Vice President of Social Impact at Submittable. Joining me today is Woodrow Rosenbaum, Chief Data Officer of Giving Tuesday. He spent the last 8 years helping to guide the data strategy that's transformed a grassroots movement into a trusted global institution. Today, he shares how Giving Tuesday built their data approach, what the sector still needs, and what the future of nonprofit data might look like. Woodrow Rosenbaum, welcome to Impact Audio. I'm super excited to have you, man. It's been a long time coming, and I'm so glad that we were able to finally get together and have a fun conversation.
Yeah, me too, Sam. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. This is the first time we've done it recorded, but yeah, it's always good to connect.
That's right. So let's start a little bit. Just tell me about you and your background, your role at Giving Tuesday, and really anything that you'd like to share about the organization that you work at.
Sure, happy to. I think, you know, most people know of Giving Tuesday as a day of the year where people celebrate generosity and there's lots of fundraising activity. Happens in more than 100 countries in the world where we have official Giving Tuesday movement leaders. Giving Tuesday is also more than that. It's an organization and a movement to build capacity in the social sector to both inspire more and leverage people's generosity. And my role in that as Chief Data Officer is to lead the team that examines all of the ways that people give and leverage their giving to make change in the world. So we look at the really kind of high fidelity trends in nonprofit fundraising and resource mobilization, but we also look at all of the ways that people give and all of the motivations for that, try to really get a holistic view of what that generosity ecosystem is like.
Yeah, like my recollection of the history here is that Giving Tuesday, it felt like it had this very grassroots beginning, and there was this hashtag, and you know, suddenly everybody was making charitable donations on a certain day of the year. And now when I look at Giving Tuesday, man, it feels like this really sort of more formal, structured, smart organization. Can you tell me a little, like, how has things evolved at Giving Tuesday from like my earliest recollection of just the hashtag to where things are now?
I mean, I think part of the beauty of Giving Tuesday is how it's so much both and increasingly both. So it's, you know, we describe it as distributed leadership. Giving Tuesday is co-created by thousands of people around the world who work on this movement and use it for outcomes that are relevant to the place that they are every day. And that happens around the world. And we support that. We support that with a centralized organization that's a 501c3 in the US and 5 global hubs, but we're not running it. This is not a kind of franchise model. We're not exporting this. We're really learning from that vast network of people and organizations who are coming together. And so what we do is we observe what these best practices are and we help those various actors, that network, connect to each other. So it does have a lot of formalized structure. I mean, my team at the Giving Tuesday Datacom is like 35 data scientists and data engineers who are building that infrastructure to support the learning and support data-driven interventions. But we are really co-creating this, whether it's our collaborative research efforts or the movement more broadly. This really is still grassroots, and it is grown and created by people who are actually in those communities, not by us and then exported to those places.
Yeah, to speak about that just a little bit more, like I'm really curious, how do you incorporate people from the community into what you're doing. Like, we've both used the term now movement, and it really feels like a movement that is occurring in charitable giving here. And I really do love that this started, in a much more sort of grassroots way than many like large charitable organizations evolve. So tell me, like, how do you incorporate those people and their perspectives into the work that everyone's doing at the organization?
Yeah, so I think what's one of the things that's critical to that is this idea of hand raisers, that this movement is grown by the people who show up, raise their hand to take it on and to build some component of it. And we don't direct that. We observe it, and we create connections. But if you just think about even the scale of this thing, our total staff is less than 70 people, distributed across 19 countries. There are 105 now official country movements, and in each one, hundreds and thousands of individuals and organizations and our groups that are creating that impact. And for some of them, it's about running a Giving Tuesday campaign. But increasingly, it's about many, many more outcomes from sort of civil society resilience to peace and reconciliation to all kinds of outcomes, or people are leveraging a generosity movement for what matters to them in those communities. It's been described by actually Henry Timms, who was one of the founders of Giving Tuesday, along with Asha. One of the things he said was, "It's not a movement if it doesn't move without you," and that is really true. We're not an organization seeking localized leadership. We are an organization that is there to support a growing grassroots localized leadership network.
And Henry Timms is the new power guy, right?
Henry Timms, yes, author of New Power. That's right.
Yeah. And it's absolutely one of my favorite books over the last 10 or 12 years. I don't remember exactly how long it's been out, but I'm very much a grassroots kind of guy myself. And so to hear Henry describe this concept of new power and how it flows like a current, and really just describing the power of movements and the capability of people coming together to achieve great things. Like, to me, a lot of that is reflected in the work that Giving Tuesday has done over the years. So I'm super excited that it has continued to maintain that sort of new power, grassroots movement feel, even as the organization has evolved. And you mentioned that you have like 25 data scientists, which is really mind-blowing to me. Let's talk a little bit about the role of data at Giving Tuesday. So, like, why is data so important to the work of the organization? And really maybe just give us a little bit of background around like how your organization evolved over the years.
I mean, like so much that is Giving Tuesday, we didn't set out to build this vast collaborative research institute. We didn't set out to kind of reinvent how data was being done in the social sector. We were trying to measure something very specific, and we ran into the issues with data in the nonprofit sector, that it's opaque, it's siloed, it's inaccessible. There's a lot of received wisdom. We were running into all of those challenges that exist. And to just answer the questions that we had, we had to solve some of those problems for ourselves. Because we were having some success at that, we ended up with data assets that enabled us to answer questions beyond just what is happening on this day in the US. And so now, and I will say that, some of this was really about intentionally taking a different approach to solving these problems. One of the first things we did was look at how are people trying to solve these problems of data in the nonprofit sector? What attempts have been made? And really identified that there are kind of three best practices that have been deployed for decades now, that were considered the right way to do it. And they just kind of always didn't work. And so we really took a very intentionally different approach to how we were going to build this in order, again, initially just to try to answer our own questions. Because we had made progress, we ended up being able to broaden this investigation much more beyond just this intervention. And certainly, so why is it important? Well, one, because our goal is to empower our network to make change. And to do that, we need data in order for them to make data-informed decisions. We need to understand what is happening in this movement, which is not an easy thing to do because of its distributed nature. It is, a lot of it is opaque to us, right? There are millions of people doing things and we don't have a direct relationship with most of those people. So that is a measurement challenge. On the other hand, the things you have to do, the things that must be true in order to shed light on that, create an opportunity for a lot more learning. And so now the Data Commons works at three sort of main pillars of inquiry. We look at resource mobilization, largely looking at sort of the donation and funding landscape for nonprofits, although also more broadly than that. Crucially, we have built both methodology and products for measuring many more dimensions of generosity to really look at the holistic ecosystem that is generous action. What are these behaviors? How do they intersect and interact? What motivates them? And what are their impacts? Both to get more, but also to enable and empower the people who are coming together to give in their communities and to inform the discourse around that in the sector. And the third component is looking at our own movement, trying to learn from this movement, what is working? How does information flow through this network? And some related topics like how do dynamic networks of people form around crisis and conflict in order to both mitigate and recover from those moments, and trying to inform things like international aid distribution with much better data about the ways in which people are solving problems in their own communities. So those are sort of three pillars of research, and we work with thousands of collaborators in the US and around the world to help answer questions that will directly inform the practice of nonprofit and social sector practitioners.
It's pretty incredible. And I'm glad that you're focused on those three pillars and methodology and thinking about the right metrics and measures and really how you like translate all of that into describing outcomes. It feels like in the nonprofit sector, to the point you made earlier, data has been, in my estimation, the biggest single challenge that we have faced as a sector. And I come from the funder side of the house. And when I look at so many grant-making organizations, and so many of them are collecting different types of data and using it in different ways, they're describing progress in different ways. They ask their nonprofit partners to often adhere to their bespoke data methodologies. And it's a little disheartening because it feels so difficult to ever be able to like take a look at the big picture. So when we have 50 funders or 500 funders who are all working in the same cause area, when we really want to understand what sort of progress is being made, it's difficult, if oftentimes not impossible, because they all have different metrics, measures, methodologies, processes. Do you feel that the work that you're doing at Giving Tuesday can be extrapolated out to help many of the organizations, whether they're funders or nonprofits, begin to standardize or create, think about data in similar ways?
So, I mean, the short answer is yes. It is a little bit more complex than that. I think, so one of the things that we observed, one of the three ways that we saw these efforts fail in the past was when the solution that is brought to the table is standardization. So standards and standardization are helpful, and having compatible data is essential. The challenge is that, so many times in this sector, and it's not confined to the nonprofit sector, but there are reasons why it's particularly challenging in the nonprofit sector. the approach was, well, if we create a data standard and everybody adheres to it, then we'll have great data. And we see time and time again that there usually, and there are exceptions, but there usually is not enough incentive to get everybody to convert to a standard. And so then you end up with building some sort of technical infrastructure that isn't getting used. So yeah, we need to standardize data. We need to make it compatible. And data standards and models are tools to assist with that. But our approach was kind of twofold. First, relationship first. Like we really focus on what is the value proposition for participating with us and ensuring that we have a path to deliver on that. And it's not the same as shared outcomes. It means individual benefit for our collaborators, whether they're for-profit organizations or nonprofits, that it's mission and outcome forward, right? Like what are they getting by participating? And then secondly, we try to do the hard work of standardization and normalization on our end. And that's had a couple of benefits. One is it lowers the barrier to entry, right? Like the organization, we're not at, you don't have to change anything. Give it to us however you've got it. We will figure it out. Now, ostensibly, that kind of limits what you can do because the first time you get a bunch of stuff that's incompatible garbage, it's very limited what you can do. But it is so often the difference between being able to do something and not being able to do anything, right? Interestingly, two other outcomes evolve from that. One is standards start to emerge. And because you're taking a lowest barrier iterative approach, people can actually start to, this is really something we've seen, they start to adapt. And secondly, we've developed some really outstanding in-house expertise on how to deal with that data problem, which in itself is useful, replicable methodology that we can both deploy and fork for others to use, as well as we have repeatedly worked with other organizations or research groups who have that problem, and we can help solve that problem for them because we've encountered it so often. So it built capacity and understanding. So I think, yes, 100%, like that's a goal, but that's not the same thing as trying to start from that place.
Yeah, that makes sense. I love the relationship first approach there. Like if I were a funder or a nonprofit developing interventions to try to solve some social challenges, I would very much want to partner with an organization equipped with data scientists and methodology and process that has been thinking about this and has the capability of helping me tell my story and see my impact in the bigger picture. Like that sounds like such a huge win compared to just going it alone. So I completely agree that the relationship first approach makes total sense. I'm also wondering, like you mentioned the Giving Tuesday Data Commons. Tell me a little bit more like what that's all about.
Yeah, so I mean, this really started as our mechanism for collaborating on research in the sector. Well before we had a robust growing team of data scientists and data engineers. We wanted to understand, we wanted to learn some stuff, and we needed people to give us data. And we didn't approach it by asking them for data. We asked them for their needs. Well, what if you could answer, what question can you not answer today that would be helpful for your mission? And then use that as our jumping off point to kind of try to work at the intersection between our mission and theirs. And so that sort of evolved into these eight or nine working groups that we have deployed and the various products that ended up getting developed as a result of that work. And what we've tried to do, not just sort of deploy one-off research projects, but use projects that have a specific research outcome to build a little piece of ongoing infrastructure. So we'll do something, we'll experiment, we'll try to get some report out. We just did something with Candid, and that's where the immediate outputs are useful and interesting, but more importantly, they create a mechanism for ongoing collection, normalization, standardization, trend trend tracking, that we're building this little pieces of interconnected infrastructure that enable us to actually go beyond just the report to the products that we need in order to have an ongoing look at what our environment is. So those projects and the working groups have expanded and expanded. We now have a couple of thousand partners. We're working around the world. Our hubs are launching their own microcosms of this. And these are organized against those three research pillars, where, and then the working groups and the products kind of fall out from there.
You mentioned Candid, and in addition to Candid, there's Impala, there is Charity Navigator, there's the Philanthropy Data Commons. There are dozens of other organizations that I'm not referencing, but all kind of tackling various data-related challenges for the nonprofit sector. Like, is this helpful from a Giving Tuesday perspective, or are we at risk of there being too many organizations kind of focused on different parts of the data equation, and potentially, like, are we at risk that we're all asking different things of the same nonprofits and consuming a lot of their resource and trying to provide the right input, the right relationship, the right data to like each of these organizations who have a slightly different focus?
I mean, this is something that this sector has been really cognizant of lately, right? There is, and it's, I've been really encouraged by the conversation, actually. It went from, we just ask for everything in case we might need it, right? To let's only ask for the things that are going to be helpful to us, that we're actually going to be using. And now we're seeing that transition to, let's ask for the things that are going to be helpful to those organizations, right? And then we'll try to get value out of that as well. But most importantly, if we're asking somebody for their data, again, this is very similar to our approach. Now, we don't work directly with organizations to get their data, which makes it ostensibly a little bit easier for us. We're working with aggregators and payment processors, and we're collecting our own data in the field. But that has been, I think, an encouraging transition from the in the sector, particularly when thinking about like grant data and grant reporting. I mean, the other component, I think, of what you're getting at is like how we have all these silos. And although I think the data environment has improved a lot since we got into this, we're seeing a lot of positive change. There is a need and an opportunity for more interconnected data. And that's, I think, our experiment with Candid, again, was we were looking at some specific areas. I think the report is pretty interesting, but more importantly, we were figuring out how can our data talk to each other. And that is a much more lasting outcome that has a potential for increasing the value and reducing the sort of the technical burden on the sector, because those data are being interconnected and used for more purposes. And we need more than that, but more of that connection happening. And a great place to start deploying things like data standards and data models, because you have this opportunity to do that on the back end, which will help, I think, to increase the value and decrease the siloization. At the
Yeah.
same time, I think we have too few solutions right now. What we really need is a much more robust ecosystem of solutions and a backbone that will support lots of people trying lots of things, where it's not about 10 different people collecting data or 1,000 different people collecting data, but 1,000 or 10,000 different solutions on top of a data infrastructure. And moving more toward that model, I think, is how we have to really modernize this tech stack for the nonprofit sector.
Yeah, I think you've totally hit the nail on the head. Like an infrastructure that multiple organizations can use for modeling, for developing data products, for discovering insights. But the real trick is like finding what that sort of infrastructure is that everybody else builds on top of, right?
Yeah, and I think again, our approach, and we are seeing a lot of traction in this. It's not like so someone has to build that, but rather we have all of these things. We actually don't need a lot of of interconnecting infrastructure in order to make those things talk to each other and make them compatible. And that's where we should be focusing our efforts, is that. And then you could we can see a proliferation of solutions being and a good example of that is our 990 project, where we have essentially all of the players who are involved in that work collaborating to create one publicly accessible, cleaned and normalized, up-to-date data set of the 990 data, with things like API connections and a data warehouse and a whole roadmap of technical roadmap for how the feature set is going to be developed. And that was really interesting, because when we brought these parties together to collaborate, what we found was each of these parties who had been kind of working with this data, we were one of them, on their own, had encountered some of the same problems and solved them in different ways. And each of those parties had discovered some problems in that data that others had not. And now what we have is the benefit of all that collective work, but none of the duplication of effort.
I love that. It feels to me like that ought to really be the way that people come together in this sector to contribute towards, a data commons or whatever we want to call it. But like, let's get the data together. Let's get tons of smart people all looking at it, identifying the various challenges, thinking through the different ways to address those challenges. Collectively improving the data, right? And then let's build some interesting stuff on top of that infrastructure. So, look, I want to talk a little bit to Woodrow about some pretty cool products that Giving Tuesday develops from its data commons. So I know that you have this annual is it the look back report, and then quarterly pulse reports. Tell me a little bit about how you're actually using this data to discover insights and produce some pretty interesting reports for the sector.
I'd love to. Our look back report is our annual sort of review of the stuff we've been looking at. And increasingly, that's our opportunity to showcase some of the work that is being done out of our global hubs and by some of our global partners, and contextualize some of the trends that we're seeing, and provide hopefully more views and opportunities to kind of think about how we might address various issues in the social sector. And that a big part of that is built on these other ongoing products. So you mentioned Giving Pulse. I think that is one of the products that is sort of most are one of our larger contributions, I think, to the understanding and discourse in the sector, because it really fit this missing piece. It's very timely. It's a survey mechanism. We're surveying Americans every week about their previous week's giving behavior. And we get an enormous amount of information about awareness and concern of crisis and response to solicitation and solicitation rates and the ways in which people are showing up. We're looking at well beyond just giving money to nonprofits. We look at all of the mechanisms people are using, how they come together in communities, giving to individuals, acts of generosity, political spectrum. Like, it is really, really deep insights and very, very timely. And for us, that was about bridging this gap, right? We have kind of episodic research into the ways people are giving, trying to kind of to get a slice of it one at a time, which is useful, but it's not as actionable, particularly because often those things were just not repeated. And then we have things that are really good ongoing longitudinal efforts, like Lily's giving panel, which gives a really good deep understanding of behaviors related to the nonprofit sector. And so this enabled us to cut, because we had those mechanisms, we could build something else. And this has been really rich, and it's already demonstrating some really important things that the nonprofit sector needs to understand if we're going to reverse some of the negative trends. I think we were already seeing that. I think a lot of people in the sector kind of look at the trends in fundraising and they think of it as like, this is what happened to us. And we've been seeing for a long time that there is really a need to look at this more in terms of, this is what we accomplished, that we have a lot more agency as an industry over our outcomes, but there are practices and exigent circumstances that are suppressing some of the potential opportunity. What Giving Pulse gives us is an opportunity to actually see that opportunity and quantify it and see what are the things that might help us get there. And we're building some very deliberate tools on top of that in order to make it actionable. So one, we use this for experimentation that we're doing. So we use the methodology to identify some potential opportunities. We deploy experiments in field to say, all right, so we think there's an opportunity here. What might move the needle there on realizing that opportunity? And then we can feed that back into the sector as well as into our own research. And then secondly, we've partnered with RKD Group, which has been really valuable because every quarter they create a field guide on top of the Giving Pulse report that really outlines for nonprofits, okay, this is what's been discovered. These are the trends that we're seeing. What do you do about it? How can you actually take action in your organization to leverage what we're seeing? When we think about this as being, we have this missing understanding of the holistic environment that we're working in, Giving Pulse really aims to fill that gap. And we're working now on expanding that around the world.
Yeah. So having that agency to influence your own outcomes is the real magic of having all of this data and the insights that it provides. And if I look back several years into the past, when we were mainly tracking just inputs and outputs in terms of our own data, like we could see that maybe giving is declining year over year, but I think we didn't have the real data to help us answer the question as to why, and then even go beyond that and determine what can we do to reverse this trend. And I think that's the real beauty of a lot of the data products that I see coming out of Giving Tuesday, is that they not only show the year-over-year trends, but they provide this incredible insight as to how we practitioners across the sector can actually influence our own outcomes.
Well, the good news is we can, right? And it's not just theoretical. Like when we see it in action, it works. So we know that. So the good news is we have agency. What is maybe a little bit more challenging for some, not necessarily bad news, quote unquote, but if you have agency, then you have accountability, right? If you are in a position where you can influence your outcomes, then, well, then now it's up to us to do something about it. And, you know, I get asked this, you probably do too, right? Like predict what's going to happen. And again, it's like people are thinking of me and many of our colleagues as like meteorologists. Like you're asking me to predict the weather as if you don't have any agency. I can tell you what's going to happen. It's what you inspire. So what are you going to do? Because that's what's going to determine your outcome more than anything else.
Do you sense that more and more organizations are willing to take action to influence those outcomes, or are people still sort of stuck in this mindset that they were 10 years ago? Like, well, we see the writing on the wall, but we don't really believe that there's anything we can do to change that writing.
Yes, I think that there is more of an understanding and willingness to step up in that respect. I think there is, there's still a lack of incentive in our industry and the way it is structured to effectively confront that truth and change practice. And we need to address all of that. We have systemic challenges in this sector that need to change if we're really going to take command of our own destiny. You know, when I talk about this at conferences and stuff, it'll be really interesting because I'll hear a lot of talk about all of the reasons why some negative trend exists that are all exigent. On the other hand, when I say, hey, look, here's the data that suggests and the examples that confirm that we actually can change this trend, mostly what I get is a positive reaction. People are prepared to, they're encouraged mostly. And I think for us, we just try to focus on those that are going to be encouraged by that and try to do something about it. Not everybody is, I mean, it is, it's easier to, I'm reminded of when my brother was employed as a fishing guide one summer, and he'd never fished in his life. And so the guy who hired him said, "It's really easy. All you have to do is make up reasons why the fish are not biting." And I think that there is an incentive to kind of look at, well, what's working against me? I want to make sure people know how hard it is. And it is hard, right? But we really need to we need to recognize that, yeah, it's a difficult environment, but it's up to us to make the best of it. And what we have seen from the data is there is untapped opportunity. We are not in a scarcity environment. There is abundance. And one of the most insidious things that we can easily drop is that scarcity mentality leads us to counterproductive efforts. So we act as if we're in a scarce environment, and that creates a scarcity outcome. And changing that perspective is the absolute number one thing we can do.
Amen, brother. Truer words never spoken on this podcast. I want to sort of address the elephant in the room, and that is that if I look at the Q2 Pulse report, one of the big headline there I think is like giving is declining, and we've seen this reflected in the Generosity Commission report that just came out, in the Dollars and Change report that you collaborated with Candid on, like. So now we know that giving is declining. Like, what sort of insights do you have from the data that help organizations reverse that trend?
Yeah, so a couple of things to contextualize this, which is again really helpful to have ongoing and timely data out of Giving Pulse, is that yes, we see a slump. We've seen those before, and I think that understanding that overall what we see as generosity is pretty robust when we look at it really holistically, in terms of an ongoing decline trend, the macro trend, we're really only seeing that macro decline in nonprofit donation participation and not across the board. The other really important thing to recognize is that there is a direct correlation between engagement and solicitation and rates of giving. And so what we see is at times when people are being less engaged and fewer people are being invited to give, well, guess what? Fewer people give. And that inaction is the major, major factor here. So partly the answer to your question is just get out there and talk to your supporters more. I'm reading online today about organizations concerned about, oh, it's going to be bad because it's an election year. Well, the data don't support that, right? But we saw this in COVID. We saw organizations pulling back in 2020 out of an anticipation that people would be less generous. In fact, the marketplace reacted in exactly the opposite way. And the organizations that showed up got a great result. And the ones that were pessimistic didn't get in on that action. And it was not just COVID response that was driving that. So we ended up with more donors, but I think we still left engagement on the table. GivingPulse not only allows us to identify what the uninvited group looks like, we are now able to estimate the value of the people who are being left out. So we looked at in the previous report this year, we looked at the people who, according to their profile, we would expect to be responsive to a solicitation who were not asked. And we think we would have seen at least a 7% more respondents responding to solicitation if they'd been asked. This hyper focus on large donor stewardship is leaving a lot of people out. So again, to answer your question, that decline we think is mostly of a fluctuation. We're talking about a slump rather than a macro trend. And the number one thing we can do about that is show up and invite people and give them an opportunity to give.
Yeah, I think that's a really brilliant insight that, if I were a fundraiser and I see that the trend over the last few years is that more dollars are coming from high net worth individuals and from the largest grant makers out there, I'm probably going to shape my strategy around approaching those types of people and organizations. And I'm going to leave out all of the individuals who may be more inclined to give, but would make smaller donations, right? And now with the data that you have from the data commons and in your repositories, you're able to actually say, look, this is not the right approach or strategy if you're a fundraiser. Here's a better one. And I think that's just extremely valuable.
And it's not either or, right? We're not suggesting abandon large donor stewardship. I think
Right.
part of the insidious part of this is in 2021, we started warning that there was this risk that this over-reliance on large donors was going to start showing up in reduced dollars. And that's exactly what happened in 22 and 23. Those large donors started pulling back. Now, the irony of that is when large donors start pulling back, the instinct to compete more for those donors that we've been over-relying on just increases, and then we just exacerbate the problem.
Yeah.
And we know those large donors are more responsive to economic uncertainty. We know that a diversified donor base is key to resilience of organizations. We got to start doing more different types of engagement. Never mind just the equity issue or the question of like who gets to decide how problems are solved if we're down to five donors in the world. We are the ones that need to decide if we want to change that system. The system is getting the outcome for which it was designed.
And let me end on one question. Since you mentioned the upcoming election, I would love to hear your thoughts, Woodrow. How do you think the election and politics is going to influence giving over the next 4 years?
For the next 4 years. Wow. Well, let me take a slightly less shorter time frame. So again, I think organizations should not assume that in the current environment that there's less opportunity for them to fundraise. I don't think I don't think the data support that concern, particularly with younger donors who see less of a distinction between giving to a political campaign and giving to a charity. I think that nonprofits tend to think of that as a risk when they should be seeing the opportunity side of that. And I think it's a perfectly reasonable position to take. How am I going to deploy resources in order to make the change I want to see? But we do not see indications of competition between different forms of giving, despite all of the concerns about that, whether it's individual crowdfunding or donations to charities or to campaigns. We do not see a competitive situation. So think about getting out there, don't retreat. And I think that's actually the biggest risk is organizations retreating because they're anticipating a result being poor. There's a lot of civic interest right now from a lot of different constituents, and that should be a good time to be going out there and giving people some opportunity to make change, whether it's because they're angry about something or worried about something or upset about something or excited or motivated about something. That's a great time to be talking to them about that something. It's difficult to predict because what we're really predicting is whether this industry is going to be active or not. But I can tell you, people are primed to give, and we're not inviting everybody.
Man, this has been a fantastic conversation, Woodrow. You have answered so many of my questions around the role of data and insights and how that all impacts giving and philanthropy. I can't thank you enough for joining me for this episode of Impact Audio. And I really look forward to getting to hang out with you at the bar at a upcoming conference in 2025.
I'm sure it will be early in the year too. And yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Sam. Thanks very much.
I can't wait to see what comes next for Giving Tuesday and how their work reshapes access to and insights from data for every nonprofit. For anyone preparing a Giving Tuesday campaign this year, we have an on-demand webinar with Ben Sampson on how to go beyond financial donations to create a more holistic strategy. The link for that is in the episode notes if you're interested. Thanks for tuning into Impact Audio, produced by your friends at Submittable. Until next time.